Hello and welcome to the Fangamer Podcast, episode 10, where we learn that we are not that good at math and should count all of our previous episodes before saying that it's episode 8. But yes, this is in fact episode 10. I am your host, Garrett Rosa, Fangamer Button Man, whatever. I don't have a good title for myself this week. But I have some awesome people with me co-hosting this week. We have our lovely Twitter liaison, Liz, here. Liz, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
And we have kind of auditioning for the podcast this week as our third chair, Mr. Dan Moore. Dan, say hello.
Hi, everybody.
And Dan, we're going to, last week we, you know, got the feedback that we should really say more about who we are and what we do. So we're gonna start off with you. And I think me and Liz will say something fun about ourselves we didn't last week. But we're going to let you kind of go through the, you know, who you are, how you're involved with the site, what's your forum name, that sort of thing. And take it away, Dan.
All right. My name is Dan. I live in Springfield, Illinois, which
you do? We live in the same state?
Yeah. I've grown up my entire life in the land of Lincoln. That's about all there is to Springfield. Even the airport is named after Abraham Lincoln, which has always seemed like an anachronism to me. My forum name is Liar Exaggerate. It's that way because when I was 12 in June of 1999, I needed to sign up for an earthbound.net name and I hadn't played the game in a few months, so I didn't spell it correctly.
And you weren't drunk at the time then?
No, not at the time.
Later that day.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, everyone has had trouble calling me Liar since then. It's a really terrible direct address.
Do you regret the name? Like, I asked Liz this, but do you regret that as your name now?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I was an old bee on the site starting around probably late 2000 because everything was so new. And even then, I regretted it terribly.
Wow.
But it had already been too long. I have a really loose affiliation with Starmon.net and Fangamer, but over the course of the past 10 years, I've moderated the Interactive Fiction Forum. Liz and I did some novel-length Earthbound fan fiction.
Oh, wow. You guys have to send me some of that so I can put it in the show notes.
Oh, it's still there.
It's in the fan fiction section.
Go to the group fan fiction section.
Okay.
All told, I think there might be like 1,200 pages. Not a joke at all.
Yeah, yeah. Each one is at least 200 pages long, and by the end we got 500 or 600 after one Falcon 24 joined us.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. We could go on.
What were you guys talking about for thousands of pages? I'm afraid to ask.
Well, it's really just really, I don't know, you can see it as awkward attempts by people who had no social skills to get to know each other. Because they were all really really bland versions of us, all of the author characters. Mm-hmm. And we all like did things characters. We wish we could do in person, like talk to each other and save the world.
Wow. In that order.
This is very telling. I never thought of interactive fiction as a way to look at the psyches of teenagers.
It really is. Oh, yeah. There's like a love nest thing going on in there, and there has been
absolutely
for 10 years.
If you go back and read them, you can tell who had a crush on who at what exact point in time, because you can see how their various characters interact.
Wow. Is this something that your kids are going to read one day and you'll be really embarrassed about that as well?
Right before I hang them.
Hang them, not yourself.
Yeah. I have to do it. It'll be like one of those crazy bathtub drowning murders that the women in Texas get executed for.
Oh, Liz.
Had to happen.
Well, Dan, we're glad to have you on the show this week. What we like to do and put you on the spot is because people should have listened to hopefully the last podcast and heard us talk about who we are. But go ahead and if you have a question for me and Liz to answer so that people will get to know us better, go ahead and ask it so we can participate with you here.
Oh, gosh, that's tough. I already know a lot about Liz, the Starmon.net figure.
Well, you described your whole youth with her, it sounds like.
Yeah, I feel like I can lead her into some very embarrassing territory.
You know what?
Take advantage of that.
No, Dan, honest to God, I told the story about crying at a Pokemon battle because a 7-year-old beat me.
There's nothing left untold.
Ask
now.
Ask me anything. I have hit rock bottom.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess keeping with the theme, what was your favorite interactive fiction moment?
My favorite interactive fiction moment, I will tell you, I don't remember which story it was, but one of the stories we were writing, I think it was like Horizon. There were like 20 authors writing the story at the same time, and there was a battle someone had written where we were all on a bridge, and I decided I didn't like half the authors who were writing it, so I had the bridge collapse and had half of them fall into the water, and everybody got so mad at me because it was like, wow, Liz, you're such a bitch, but you didn't need to make it obvious.
That's so something we would have done, though.
Those people I still don't like today, so screw them.
Excluding people from early on.
Yeah, for the benefit of this audience, we used to have an IRC chat room where we would coordinate all of these interactive fictions.
And your attacks against people.
And at the beginning, we would try to rush ahead so that no one could read the entire topic and join in.
Can I ask something real quick?
Yeah.
Were you in the chat room where Luna was trying to train us to unlock our latent psychic powers? Like, totally ironically? Psionics?
I think I remember that.
Yeah. We would sit around and she would tell us to hold our hands together and concentrate to channel the power of a psi-ball, which was like a ball of electric goo that would form in your hand after meditating for like a half hour.
This is how much we wanted to be our interactive fiction characters.
This is how much we wanted to have lives, man.
This is that level of fandom and fan craziness that we try and pretend that Fangamers is helping refine into something great, but it's really telling, you guys.
None of us had an inflation fetish, so we are cut above.
And also, just a note before Dan asks me a question is, interactive fiction doesn't sound like you guys really wanted to interact with anyone else. It just not very interactive.
Yeah.
It was very insular.
I was a very mean person back then. I'm much more chipper now.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree to that.
Yeah.
So, Garrett, you talked about it a little last time, but I don't know, like, what made you, since you were kind of on the wane at Starmind.net, what made you want to get into Fangamer on a more full-time basis?
I would say it's two things. Being proximity to Reedman, it'd be one.
Oh, of course.
Because everyone wants to be by him. He's the most famous internet celebrity of our entire... He's the king of the kingdom, so to speak.
He's a charmer.
Yeah.
He is burly.
He really reminds me of Nathan Fillion, if you've ever... I don't know. You know who that is? From Firefly or
Every
from...
time you say that, I picture Nathan Lane. I'm like, why are you saying that? You're such a dick.
Firefly, what else is he from that you might have seen? He was on Buffy for the last season. He was the bad guy. Serenity. Oh, he's got that show called Castle now, which is terrible. Well, I don't know. It might be great. I haven't seen it. But anyway, he looks a lot like him, and he reminds me of the captain from that a lot. Mal, they have similar archetypes in a way. But I guess for the most part, it's because the job I have, I don't truly enjoy that much, and it doesn't afford me the opportunities to do... to really enjoy my life and do things I love to do, and working with them just over the Penny Arcade stuff, I was immediate that they work extremely hard, but it's something they love, and it makes them happy that even though they're busy and stressed out all the time, just working makes them happy, and that was such a contrast to what my life is like, fixing people's computers who don't care if it's fixed or not. It's like it was nice to see that, and I was like, well, if I can do anything to take my life into my own hands, I'm going to try and see what I can do. So that's why, to try and be a part of something bigger than myself, I guess.
That's why I did interactive fiction.
I was going to say something nice, but you just took the wind out of my sail.
Oh, that would really go against what our podcast is about, Liz, if you were nice to me. So
I'm just trying to maintain your character here.
You're doing a good job, but I feel the same way, man. Like, when I was working at the jewelry store, and I would just see these women come in, spend like $30,000 and just berate their husbands, and it's like, I want to sell stuff to people who are, like, younger and decent people who haven't been, like, chewed up and spit out by life. Yeah. I hated the people I sold to.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's crack into... our first topic today, which is just kind of what games have we been playing, and I think let's start off with Liz. I think she has a game she'd like to talk about.
I actually have a game this week, and I went and checked what the title was with Matt upstairs. I legitimately played this time. It is a game.
You didn't play it. You didn't backseat play it then.
I didn't backseat Excellent. Play it. Excellent. Yeah, it's called Global Agenda, and it's a first-person shooter, like third-person. It's actually third-person, I think, but it's a shooter. It's an FPS.
So. Omniscient shooter.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Whatever you kids today are calling it. And it's like any other shooter, I would assume, since I don't play that many. But the basic classes, they're not named this, but it's basically heavy, engineer, medic, and spy. So it's a good introduction for me, who's never played TF2 or Left 4 Dead or any of them, because as I may have previously explained, I was told I was too terrible to ever be allowed on those servers. So,
So is this... It's its own game, or is this like a TF2 mod? Or
it's its own game, yeah. The classes are actually called totally different things. It's
but that's
like
what they're
a,
like. I got you.
Yeah, it starts out, it puts you in like a lobby where your character levels up. I think it goes from 1 to 50, and your character is placed in this waiting room lobby where you can buy gear and you can spend your experience points on different types of armor and accessories and slots and that sort of thing. It kind of combines an MMO with a shooter where there's character progression. And
sounds
like,
kind of cool.
It is actually really fun. And the character I attempted was, I can't remember what it's called, but it was like the heavy equivalent where your job is to stand on the point with a minigun and just mow down anybody who's there.
Okay. So what is this for? What system?
Computer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a PC game. I have been told, if you guys play shooters, you'll understand this. Apparently, I am someone who abuses the S key, and I am terrible.
The S key? Like, yeah. Going backwards a lot?
Yes, going backwards a lot, and not going, like, strafing, just slowly walking backwards when I get into trouble.
I don't think I play enough FPS shooters to have things like someone who sucks enough to walk backwards all the time down to an acronym like an S abuser.
Even know that was an archetype. Yeah.
Like, I have that for WoW, but not for FPSs. I've never been that great at them, so...
Well, I was watching Matt walk through Orgrimmar in WoW earlier, and he saw a guy who was in the a guild called the S Key Alliance, and he's like, "Steven, that's you. You should be in that shitty guild."
Oh, such love.
Yeah, it's true though. Like I never learned how to strafe or do any kind of movement with my mouse.
So you're like, go, get farther away from him.
Yeah, so like I'll do this terrible keyboard turning BS.
Oh no, keyboard turning. I know that phrase.
I am a keyboard turner and an S key.
Do you know what that is, Dan?
No, explain for me and the audience.
So as opposed to strafing, so where you're looking at the object that you're firing against and like looking at them and then just move left or right while keeping your focus on them, you, in order to move the direction of left, you look left and then move and then look right again and then shoot back at what you're trying to shoot at.
Yeah, it's very inefficient, but I don't know. I've never really played computer games, to be honest. I've always been a console person, and so trying to play Global Agenda and not slowly walking backwards and keyboard turning is the hardest thing in the world for me because I have no experience.
Good times.
But I'll tell you this is kind of pathetic. I never wanted to play an FPS because my only experience with a shooter was GoldenEye, which your gun, like, you could see the hand drift automatically to point towards whoever was on the screen.
Yeah.
The way I assumed you aimed guns in computer shooters was I assumed your left hand was on WASD, and I assumed your right hand was on the arrow keys, and it would control a target all the way around the screen. And so all your movement would be done with the keys on the left hand, and you would aim slowly with the right hand. And I thought, how are these people so good at this? This looks impossible.
You think they were enjoying it?
I don't know. I figured it was like some self-flagellating thing that men just did. But I tried Global Agenda, and I was like, wait a minute. The cursor's in the middle of the screen, and where I'm looking is where I'm aiming.
Wow.
Of course.
That must have been an eye-opening moment. Okay,
it was. So now I'm ready to try Team Fortress 2. So you guys can all get ready for one more keyboard turner on
this
your show.
We don't drink heavily before the podcast, but...
I'm not that drunk.
Not yet, at least. But anyway, just since you brought that up, I know that we play, Fangamer does a game night, and I think it's actually right now when we're recording, so we'll have to try and find a way to record this at a different time, so
yeah,
you can join into that fun, my fault. But so Dan, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I've been playing actually for the last 2 or 3 weeks, my first ever Final Fantasy game, Final Fantasy VI.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one to start
out
with.
That is a great one to start out with. That's
it all goes downhill from there, buddy.
Sounds good.
You're playing that on DS, right?
No, I actually have the Super Nintendo version.
Oh, good for you.
I've just never played it.
Good for you, man.
That is the way to do it. That's what I did. I got it on eBay.
It wouldn't have felt right, honestly.
How much was it?
I got it probably 10 years ago. I have no idea how
I thought you said
and
you got
it
on eBay.
It?
Yeah, it's weird. I always wanted to be a big Final Fantasy and RPG fan, but even now, the only ones I've ever finished are Earthbound, Mother 3, Earthbound Zero, and Mario RPG.
Wow, but you've beaten Earthbound Zero. That's
pretty good,
man.
Even the worst Final Fantasy is better than Earthbound 3.
Oh, you're killing me with that.
Or Zero, yeah. So what do you think, man? Have you been enjoying it, or how's it going?
Yeah, it's really interesting to know. I don't know. I've been a video game internet personality for a long time, and it's interesting to finally know like what Moogles are and why people like them, and what the opera scene means. I'd heard about that since I've had internet access,
Are you enjoying the experience of playing through that game and seeing what different forum users you've known have taken their names from? Like, do you look at Cyan and just think, I hate you?
I find him a lot more brave that he's enjoying Digimon in the forums while his wife and child are dead.
You gotta find something to comfort yourself.
Well, yeah, it's really lent a new light for me to look at him.
I have no idea what you guys are saying, which says to me that the majority of our audience will have just tuned out and just stopped the podcast.
You know, right, Cyan, there. DJ Mon over
right,
on Radio
but,
PSI.
But what you have said in all that at once.
That was a promo for Radio PSI.
We'll have to record that and send it to him. So, but you had said something earlier that I wanted to comment. Oh, about the opera scene. Just because I was playing through and still see Chrono Trigger for the first time, and the trial scene, that's the same thing for me. I'd heard people refer to it, and I'd never, and playing, I was like, oh, okay, I gotcha. And that scene, I was like, I can see why this was really cool at the time, and it made sense to me. But we've had games since that have done that sort of thing. But so, Dan, overall, though, this is your first Final Fantasy. Do you feel that you love Moogles? What are they called? The birds?
The chocobo.
Do you have a chocobo yet? Have you an affinity for them?
No, I haven't written a chocobo fan fiction yet.
That's how we know you really love it.
Yeah. There's still time. But no, the opera scene was, it was really fascinating to see what people had been talking about this entire time. Except for, I don't know, it felt really anticlimactic to me because, spoiler alert, the boss is a giant octopus.
Yeah, Ultros is a little ridiculous. I found that kind of dumb as well. But again, I played it when I was like 18 or 19 for the first time. So maybe when you're 8, you're like, yeah, it's an octopus. That's badass.
I think, 8-year-olds, octopus are on that level of that is freaking rad. It's like a monster, but it's real.
And when you're 13, it's like, yeah, that girl might get raped by that octopus. you're still ready to go.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, kids.
So you're saying that's a dynamic I'm missing coming at now. Okay. The rape dynamic.
All right, we're getting right out of this conversation. I'm going to tell you guys what I've been playing this week so it doesn't continue. I actually picked up for Wii, or I guess downloadable on the Wii, the original Phoenix Wright, which I played the Justice for All and a couple of the other ones, and I've always called Phoenix Wright the game that is the best Dramamine, because I play those games and it puts me to sleep. And so anytime I want to take a nap, I'll bust out Phoenix Wright and start playing through one of the court scenes, and then I'll just fall asleep with the DS in my hand from reading so much. But have you guys played any of the Phoenix Wright games?
I've played the first one on the DS, and I'm surprised. When you said Dramamine, I knew, or at least I thought I knew, you were going to talk about the scenes where you have to click around and try to find evidence.
Oh.
I've heard those are terrible.
That's the most boring thing you can possibly.
That definitely does couple into why. But for me, playing Justice for All, was they added a lot more mechanics. But for the original for the Wii, I'm actually enjoying more. because it's a lot simpler. You don't have to do the little Psylocke. I feel like they really, it's all underhand throws for this game. It's really simple to find the contradictions and what you need to be telling them and presenting. There's not nearly as much evidence. There's not nearly as many people to have to talk about. And of course, I'm only like two cases in, so it could grow, but I can tell just from the way they put it together, it's not nearly as intense. But it just reminds me of a lot of things that about this game that I've always found actually quite charming. The localization for it I really like, especially the cheesy renaming of characters to like Larry Butts and stuff like that. I think they do a really good job with that. Other thing it reminds me of is, do you guys remember the, I don't know the full name of the Detective Club, the one that Clyde did the translation part of it on?
I just remember those badges.
Of course.
I don't remember the name, badges. But I know what you're talking about.
Well, it's kind of in a similar style, and it's definitely a Japanese game where you're going around trying to find evidence, and it's not court cases, but I think you're trying to uncover a girl's murder, the one
Are
that
you
I
a
played.
Schoolgirl?
Yeah.
The girl is the one who's killed, I think, in it.
Yeah,
really?
They had like
that
a
makes
statue.
It much more grisly.
Well, yeah, the one that the badge was of wasn't the girl who was killed. I think she's like the person who helps you out. It's like she was the friend of the girl, and then the one who actually that wasn't the badge, at least from what I remember. But so you guys didn't play through that at all?
I think I just found it. I looked it up. Is it the Famicom?
Yeah, yeah.
Entei Club Part 2, aka yeah. Famicom Detective Club, the girl who stands behind.
Yeah, I mean, I played it because, you know, Clyde did the translation, so I thought, you know, Clyde's a great guy, I'll give it a try. And it was really enthralling, and I enjoy it way more than the Phoenix Wright games because it actually freaked me out a lot playing that game. So if you actually get a chance to try it out or download the ROM for it and the translation patch they did, because I don't think it was ever released here in English, that game is really creepy. Like, there's a lot of, like, it'll scare you even though it's just text. Like, the way they put it together is quite impressive. Where sometimes Phoenix Wright does it, but it's still so over the top with everything that it usually doesn't for me. But so yeah, it was cool to see that, the characters being kind of weird. The one thing I did want to kind of touch on real quick was that they make you have to actually buy the last episode of the game. So, like, the last chapter, you have to purchase as downloadable content, which I thought was a really kind of a dick move. Like,
that is a dick move.
I don't know how much it is. Maybe it's really cheap, but that really bothers me. Like, you know, like Fable 2 had a bunch of downloadable content, which I don't think was removed from the game. So I don't feel too, like, it never would have been in the game in the first place. So I didn't feel bad purchasing it. But this sort of thing, I think, it kind of bothers me a lot. But what do you guys think?
Well, do you think like 20 years from now we're going to sound like those people who regret that people use iTunes instead of buying albums? Like, I hate to think I'm going to be that curmudgeonly because I want to play an entire game after paying for it once.
I think if it's like you, let me clarify what you're saying, Garrett, just to make sure we're clear. You get the whole game for one transaction, except for the very end.
I think that's what it looks like. It says purchase court case 5 or whatever it is.
See, yeah, that is stupid to me. If they made you pay for chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 individually, I have no problem with that. If you buy the whole game for a lump sum, I have no problem with that. But to make you play, like, the majority of the game and then be like, by the way, I hope you didn't spend your last $10 on this because... You'll never know.
In their defense, the nature of the Phoenix Wright games is that each court case is a separate story. So you would finish the court case before it and it would be completed. You're just missing out on an extra story you get to play through. So it's not so much as like, here's chapter 5 of the story that you need to finish the whole story. You're not missing out on the conclusion.
So it's not like a trauma center type thing where there's an overgoing plot theme.
There is, but it's so light that you're not really missing out on
it's
much.
Like, what hat is Phoenix gonna wear to the theater tonight? At the end, it's like, oh, it's blue.
Oh, blue.
Hey, spoiler alert.
Yeah, seriously. All right, well, let's crack into Fangamer news. We got a couple cool things to talk about. We talked about last week the 2300 Ruin World shirt and the CT Moto jacket. Those will both be coming out very soon. We wanted to talk briefly, though, that the Ruined World shirt will actually, you'll be able to purchase it at the same time as the jacket when it comes out, but it will actually be delayed shipping. So it'll probably be about 2 or so weeks before those orders are completely shipped out. So keep that in mind when you place your orders. Another cool thing that I'm actually really cool, I think it's really cool that we get to talk about this on the podcast, because this is one of those things like that we talk about in our in Basecamp and everything, that I'm always like, this is the reason that working for Fangamer is awesome, because I get to see all this stuff beforehand, and this is one of those things that is like so cool. So I'll even be nice. Liz, do you want to spoil it for the people?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Camille's figurines.
Oh, geez. All right. I'm off track. You tell them. Like, you build it up so much. Like, and then talk about the theme of hype. Dude, Camille's figures are great, but...
Okay. Considering the fact that when Camille's figures come out, there's only about 20 of them. They're all handmade. And if you don't subscribe to our Twitter feed or just hit refresh on the store, you're not probably going to be able to buy them unless you're there in the first 10 hours of them being on the store. Mm-hmm. That this news is that Camille and Reed have found an actual manufacturer who will be able to mass produce her figurines to a pretty similar quality that she's able to produce. Someone else will do the painting, someone will also do some of the molding, and she would just do the original, so that we could actually sell, 300 of the Minus Men instead of just 20, and people could actually, purchase those. So I think it's pretty cool. We've just gone into talking about it now with the vendor, and it'll be a while before deals are worked out. We figure out what she's actually going to put on there. But, Reed gave us the okay to kind of spoil it. But in the future, because we've had people ask, we really want to be able to get more of Camille's figurines. There's a way that, everyone eventually will be able to have their own Camille figurine in the not too far distant future. So that's pretty cool.
That is cool. I just got confused because you were saying so much, but I do like one aspect of that is that when there's only like 20 figures or so, mm-hmm. I feel guilty about getting one because it's like I'm on the staff,
right? I don't buy them and this or that.
Dick, so I don't ever buy them, and I'd like to because they're great quality. I have a little floppy of hers from the Winter Fun Fest a couple years ago, and I love it, but. Yeah. I kind of don't get those things. I mean, I'm not going to be Brian.
Well, I went and actually requested or commissioned one from her personally for Jen, because I wanted to do the same thing. I was like, I really want one of these, but I was like, I'm not going to take it away. Yeah, I think I talked about it once that I want. And it might have been in one of the podcasts that didn't end up airing, but I should probably put up pictures of her Animal Crossing figure at some point.
No, she's got them. She just put up, she just updated like a gallery website of hers. I'll find a link for you to put it in the show notes.
Camille Art or something. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes for people. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The last thing I think we're going to talk about, let's talk about Office Cam real quick. Office Cam, again, has really been stepping it up in terms of quality. They're doing a lot of really awesome stuff. Every Friday now they're doing the Camille Art hour or whatever you want to call it, and she is building something, and then they take audience suggestions on how to kind of customize it, and it's been pretty funny. But they actually then go and cook them, and I think they're actually going to find ways to give them away as prizes, probably through Office Cam. So if you are interested in getting a very one-of-a-kind sort of figurine, tune into Office Cam to check that out. We have Fan Fest has been going on. Ryan kind of put together where it's sort of like the mini of our big fests, big fun fests. But every 2 weeks, I think, that he's been changing mm-hmm. the topic.
Yeah,
it's twice a month, basically. Twice.
Okay. Right now, the theme is hometown scenes, which is, draw a scene from one of the hometowns in one of the games in Earthbound series.
It doesn't have to be just draw. You can do a musical remix. Oh, that's true. Painting, if you have any kind of talent whatsoever, or even if you don't, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah,
we do not discriminate.
And has he talked about prizes yet?
Yeah, he has, right? There's like a prize.
Should we not talk about?
They exist. I'm not sure what they are.
I know.
He's made it official. I know what they are too, and I think everybody does.
Do we? Okay, because I mean there are various coupons to the store.
Let me do it. I have them right in front of me. All right. Okay,
go for it.
Participants will always get a decay badge that lasts until the end of the next round. Keep submitting and keep your badge. Second place gets a $5 Fangamer coupon. Hooray.
Hooray.
First place gets a $10 Fangamer coupon and a rank and a FanFest winner's badge. Mazel tov. First place for the second win gets a $20 Fangamer coupon, to which Ryan says in parentheses, OMG, that's like a shirt on us. And it's get true. An avatar to boot.
I can't imagine him saying OMG.
Win a shirt on Ryan. He comes to your house and demos look bound around new silver.
Maybe you have to buy him a drink, though, because he came all that way.
And here's the really sexy thing, which is not Ryan. First place for a third win, you win a third time, and you get a figure made by Camille. It hasn't yet to anyone, because there have only been two fan fests, so it is literally impossible.
Wow.
But that is a very good prize.
Yeah, that's like Glengarry Glen Ross. You have the Cadillac for first and the steak knives for second. Wow. Although, I still say, you know, free shirt, you know, that you don't have to buy. And that's actually a pretty good prize, too, though. So, all right. Well, let's crack into our main topic then for this week, which is overhyped video games. I really thought we'd get a lot more flame bait, a lot more people calling out some specific franchises in here. But to kind of recap, a lot of the video game enthusiast press has a long history of playing the catalyst to video game developers' PR hype. Peter Molyneux definitely being benefiting from that. And a lot of times that's not a good thing. That what ends up coming out is a game that didn't change our lives, didn't make us actually cry, or didn't make us stop putting the game down for more than 10 minutes. And ends up being a game you trade back to GameStop almost immediately. So one thing that I wanted to kind of bring up right that is Peter Molyneux. He is, to me, the epitome of the hype machine, because every single game he has done, he is almost on the record, always has to go back and apologize for his games not being everything he said they were going to be. And I always wonder if it's of his own accord that he does that, or if it's the company telling him, dude, you got to stop spouting your mouth off and go in there and apologize for the third time, Peter. With his tail between his legs, he goes and writes a memo or something.
You know what? I bet it's probably him and not his company, because I bet he's one of those weird dudes that's like so caught up in his own vision that when he sees the game, he's probably embarrassed for the entire team for not making his vision
spill forth. Hmm. I don't know. So have you guys played any of the Fable games?
I certainly got all the press for the original Fable, and then when it turned out to be not what it was, I didn't bother.
What was that line you were telling me about with like the acorn or something?
Yeah, how the one of the famous lines Peter Molyneux had said was that you can get an acorn in the game and drop it. You can drop it literally anywhere. Every piece of land is fertile, apparently, which doesn't even work that way in real life, but apparently in the world of Fable, you can drop an acorn on the ground, and as you progress through the game, it will sprout into a beautiful tree, and that tree will be integral in your hero's journey.
You know, the amazing thing about that is that that exact example also came up in Earthbound 64 and in Ocarina of Time.
About the tree thing, that you can plant a tree?
Yeah, like you would plant something, and then later on it would come back to save your characters.
That's vaguely true in Ocarina.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You count the 10 magic beans.
Yeah, well, it's Earthbound 64 and Ocarina of Time both suffered from the 64 DD not actually existing.
Yeah.
Vaporware. Well, on the Fable topic, Fable 2, I feel, has actually cashed in on a lot of the promises he made in the first Fable. So if he had just kept his mouth shut about all the different things it could have done, I don't think people would give him as much crap. But Fable 2 has done a lot of things where you can see how you have affected the world throughout time, which is cool. But I feel a lot of games talk about that and still have yet to deliver on that. Like a lot of the BioWare games always talk about how good and evil, and you'll really have to make decisions that will make changes things. And they really, I feel, haven't really lived up to that hype until with like the Mass Effect series now, where the second game things are drastically different depending on how you play the first game. But other than that, Fable, that, and then the third Fable that just came out, he's doing the same thing again. He is already saying, people are going to be so mad when they hear about this thing we're doing in Fable 3. Oh, they're going to be so mad. And you know, that's just going to be too bad. It's going to be too bad. And it was just him saying that there's not going to be a HUD. There's not going to be a heads-up display. It's just going to be you seeing the character. And it's like, wow. Yeah, people are going to be not that pissed about that. But whatever you say.
Yeah, my life changed when I first saw that happen in, I think, Pitfall 2, where there was no heads-up display.
I don't know how we can live without a heads-up display. One of the other games that came up in a lot of, not just the forum thread, but I think we might have seen it in Twitter, we saw it on Facebook, was Scribblenauts. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked about Scribblenauts on the podcast before about
not we did to with us and John, I believe. Right.
And I haven't played it yet, and I don't. I think either of you have played Scribblenauts.
I did not.
I haven't either, but I think it's, I don't know, it's kind of a party to Fable, where it's whenever these games promise that there are going to be patterns that we can't recognize as being a linear video game storyline. The problem is that they're promising it to us who have played all kinds of video games already and are going to, we're going to see through it no matter what.
Yeah, I just feel like Scribblenauts, I always wonder if it's the developer who's talking too much trash about how awesome they are, or if it's the publisher that says, oh man, this is going to be a great game, let's pimp the crap out of this, and then that ends up running them deep into the ground.
You know, I feel like there's always, I don't know why publishers would want their companies to do it to that extreme, because I feel like when these publishers promise games that have a completely and totally non-linear experience, where you can get in there and just change the entire world, I feel like that kind of AI, if that existed, I feel like we'd hear about it like on CNN and from the military and stuff. I feel like it wouldn't be like, Skynet. Wow, Scribblenauts got it before the CIA did.
Yeah.
Speaking and the other thing is, it's games like these are often just not as interesting as they seem to us when we're reading about them. Shenmue, which I was talking about before we started recording, I waited for that game for 2 or 3 years. I bought the Dreamcast the day it came out. I was that guy.
$9.99. Never forget.
Got to. Yeah.
Never forget.
That was the real tragedy of the list.
It really was. So I had been looking forward to it forever, and it really delivered on a lot of its promises. I mean, people went about their daily lives, and you could talk and they'd say different things, and that's just not as exciting as it seems until you start playing it. The closer a game gets to life, I think the less interesting it's going to be a lot of times.
Although you have games like The Sims, where it is essentially, I mean, I got to the point in Sims where I'm like, I cannot believe I played so much of this game that my own life is now suffering for it, for this little virtual guy in my little virtual dollhouse.
You have to stop playing The Sims when your characters get better dressed than you are.
Yeah. You get a better job.
Garrett, did you forget where you were going and like pee your pants suddenly? Because that happens, apparently.
Not very often, but it can on occasion. But, you know, I just realized, Liz, you had brought up, we were talking about this topic originally on what we should do for the podcast. The Sims, not Sims, but what was Will Wright? Spore. Talk about Spore.
Terrible failure.
I remember the hype train for that. That was, you're going to see the creation of the world and life as it is.
Yeah, it was, you will literally be God.
Yeah.
And instead it was like, you will literally be the god of a creature creator kingdom where you will get to make little furry animals like shaped like a blitzball. Well, thanks. That's great.
I just remember that one of the development and the technology for it was one of the few things for it that actually the hype ends up living up to a piece of it. That, and this is going to get technical, so I apologize for people who don't give a crap, but that the actual way they make the game, that you can create these characters that you know, the person who built the game has no idea what you're going to make, which means they don't know how to actually animate what it is you're going to make beforehand. So the game has to figure out how to make a three-legged, you know, weird triceratops creature walk. So having animation occur within the actual game by the game is huge, because it means you don't have to pay tons of animators to do all the work beforehand. So it was a big piece of technology that made, that was in theory going to make game development much cheaper, because you wouldn't have to have as many artists doing animation. But I don't think that's actually happened, or didn't pan out like he wanted. It ends up still being super expensive to make any game. Yeah. So.
I think where they screwed up with Spore was, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they release a demo of the creature creator before they released the game? That's where they screwed up. Is because that's the only reason you buy that game. And then when they released it separately, well, shit, who's going to buy the whole game now? Because it sucks. They should have just not released anything. Like, they should have kept everything hush-hush, except for their stupid hype train, released the game, and then gotten all the suckers to buy it. But when you put the creature creator out first as, like, a beta download, then once people get that out of their system, they're like, I don't really want to make a three-legged donkey anymore. And you could have had their $50, but now you have nothing.
Although I have to say, I do remember people making some really cool creatures in that game, but you're right. If they sell it beforehand, you really defeat the purpose of having to have done that in the first place.
Yeah.
The game. Well, we had some other interesting ones on here that came up in a bunch of places was actually mini games from the Zelda franchise, which was the one kind of flame baity thing that did come up. But people were quite civil, so you know, kudos to all of you. But Zelda Ocarina of Time came up a couple times. I personally disagree. I don't think it had that the hype somehow overshadowed it at the time. That game was amazing when that game first came out, because I remember riding my bike across town to where I had reserved it to get the special gold copy, ride my bike back all the way home, putting that at the N64, and it was the first game at the time that was anything like that. You know, Mario 64, you know, was the first kind of 3D platformer like that, but putting the Zelda franchise in there was, I still can remember how amazing it was, and even saying to my brother at the time, wow, this is the future, or something like that, to him, really cheesy. But in that case, I think the hype train is well warranted. I feel it did live up to it. But I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you think, Dan?
Well, the hype actually made me enjoy Ocarina of Time more. I mean, I was watching it like Elobo was. I drooled over every new Nintendo power, and I AOL keyword Nintendo also had some fine screenshots. And when it came out, it was exactly what I wanted it to be. And so I don't just have memories of playing the game for the first time. I also have memories from about a year beforehand when I was waiting to play the game. And then when I got back with my friends and we started, I thought it met everything I wanted it to do.
What's kind of cool about the hype train for that game is I think it is one of the first games that was really hyped before release and really got a lot of press. Because there's a lot of footage out there and screenshots where you can see exactly how much it changed from beta. Like, that game different when it was first envisioned. There's a lot of screenshots of how Hyrule's different. Like, lots of enemies have totally different models. The button configuration was different. It's pretty neat seeing a game evolve like that. And that is one of the benefits of having a game get overhyped. And I guess the internet in general is you can see how games progress to get from point A to point B.
Do you think that actually, and this is a question for both of you, because having followed the press beforehand, I mean, that's what we're saying is kind of the bad thing, is that if you follow all this before and the game doesn't ever live up to these screenshots and these expectations, but this time actually following along did make it worthwhile. So what was it about Zelda that the hype didn't end up making it worse than it was for you guys?
Well, how could it? The thing is, it was the first 3D Zelda game. How could it not live up to the hype? Like, they were going to put their best. The timing. It's the same with Mario 64. And like anything in the first year of the N64, even if it was like Glover BS shovelware.
Bomberman 64.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if it was the worst of the worst, it was still the coolest thing you had ever played.
Yeah. I don't. Dan, do you agree?
I agree in principle, I guess. Zelda 64 was basically the great white hope of Nintendo 64, I guess. While everyone was playing Final Fantasy VII and telling me how stupid I was, I just said, well, just wait for Ocarina of Time. I mean, I followed that game so closely, I still have some of the AOL screenshot captions memorized.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, love here today in the Fangamer podcast.
And Final Fantasy VII, like, I always found that kind of half-assed. I think, wasn't 10 the first Final Fantasy game where they actually did a 3D render of the backgrounds?
Yeah.
Aside from the old.
Yeah, that's right.
I always thought that was stupid.
Well, but even then, there really isn't much of it. Is there much of an overworld in 10? I don't think there was.
No, there is no overworld, but everything was rendered in 3D, but it was always from a fixed camera angle, so...
Yeah, it was kind of a cheap way to do it.
It was a cheap way. I guess 12 would have been the first one, not counting the MMO, where...
Everyone always ignores that MMO.
Screw it. I don't have 75 hours to fight a boss, sorry.
All right, so then let's stick with Zelda a little bit further then. Other games in the actual series that have come up recently seem to have also kind of fallen pit to this, that they have the hype train for the new Zelda games. I don't know if I would agree with that, just for the pure fact that they come out so frequently now that there doesn't seem to be enough time for a real big hype train to get started and rolling.
Well, I think there was for Twilight Princess because...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Twilight Princess was supposed to be this return to Ocarina where Majora's Mask was a great game, I think, but it was very different from anything the franchise had seen before. And Wind Waker took the art direction and really the overworld to a totally different level. Again, I thought it was ambitious and it lived up to the hype. A lot of people hated it, especially after seeing the Space World demo where it was like that real epic fight of Link fighting Ganon and there was fire and everybody's cape looked so swishy. And then when like E3 or something rolled around, maybe I haven't flipped, but when Link was like a cartoon and people were pissed.
So that seems like a place where the hype would have actually hurt it, because seeing how the game changed, but
that changed a lot.
It really did, but and I have respect for why they did it, but I still don't really enjoy Wind Waker very much. It had a lot
of problems. The end game was terrible, and the overworld was just too big. But at its core, I think it was a really fun game and one of the better Zelda games, and certainly better than Twilight Princess.
And Wind Waker is kind of one way of dealing with hype. I mean, because now you can't live up to Ocarina of Time because it's not going to be an entirely new kind of game anymore. So when something like Twilight Princess gets hyped up, it's just bound to disappoint.
That's true. So it does sound like if you're hyping something up that is truly going to be something new that we haven't seen before, you have a good chance that you'll be okay. And maybe that's a litmus test we can use to kind of diffuse hype going forward. We have a really great comment from Ann K on a game that was overhyped for her that I want to read aloud here. So Ann writes this on the Facebook page for Fangamer. Fantasia for the Sega Genesis is her hyped game. And it goes on to say, I thought it would be like Castle of Illusion, but instead it was a Fortress of Nightmares. They were hyping it up at the time because the movie was being re-released in the theaters. My father is a big fan of the movie, so he would force me to play the game just so he could, and in quotes, watch the game. Many arguments over, why are you dying so much? Followed by, and this is her saying, I'm only six, you play. Made this the most overly hyped game I ever got. I just like the quotes over watch because it just makes the whole thing super creepy. Like her dad was watching her play the game, honey, play the game.
And just sitting there with like his hands, like Casey watching The Dark Knight at the con for those 20 people out there who know what I mean by that. But like just sitting forward with your hands together and like staring.
Like Golem, the ring.
Yeah, not blinking.
Well, I don't know. That one, I think we both all agree, is more about just weird family stuff than anything.
Anything that starts with overhype and then tells a lot about your home life is going to get read on this podcast.
My father was terribly overhyped. And then I finally met him.
That is an interesting point, though, in terms of being a child. Do you think that for a kid, overhyping a game, does that even come into play? Do you think a kid really gets disappointed at all? Does the media affect them at all? Do they get excited then get let down? Or is that more of an adult thing where you get to an age of, you know, a teenager or older that you can actually be let down about a game? Because, I mean, when I was a kid, man, any game that you could control anything on the screen would have been freaking rad and I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
That's another kind of hyping, though, where it's, I don't know, I learned more about Mario 64, for instance, from my classmates than I did from video game magazines. We kind of hyped it up among ourselves.
Yeah, that is a different kind of hype. It's word of mouth, I guess, is the more appropriate term. But kids, you're right. You put a kid in front of a game, and depending upon how old the kid is, they're going to be thrilled just because they get to touch a controller. But as you get older, I don't know. I think the answer is hype is not always a bad thing, but you better be able to live up to it.
Yeah. Well, actually, it sounds like we're kind of winding down to our final thoughts here. So I am going to play for our podcast listeners and not for ourselves here the Kevin's final word on the topic here. He actually did put together a recorded segment for us. So I'm going to play that now for everyone, and we'll let him kind of close out this conversation.
For my birthday one year, I received the gift of gaming, The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. The game came with full-color maps and a hint sheet, and being a somewhat voracious reader of instruction booklets, I immediately cracked them open and read them. I beat the game in 3 days with that help, and a curious sense of disappointment settled on me. I wondered if, perhaps, I hadn't used all those shortcuts, all those tips, I might have enjoyed the game more. A few short years later, the Big N announced they were working with Squaresoft to make a role-playing game out of the Super Mario series. Recalling my previous experience with Zelda, I resolved to avoid any information whatsoever about this game before I got to play it. I was determined to make it a totally fresh experience. Of course, it was a big deal, so previews were being featured in all kinds of places you wouldn't expect them. I narrowly avoided an article in a movie theater magazine. I conscientiously dodged Nintendo Power, lest they spoil events on their cover. Finally, I got to play the game, and it did not take me 3 days to beat it. It took two. The truth about hype, and its cousin the spoiler, is that you generally get what you look for. I didn't go out of my way to ignore news about Mother 3 prior to its release, and the big events of the game were still surprises to me. And in this day of technological superiority, where you can scan through website articles on an RSS feed and decide which ones you'd like to click on, it's easier than ever to be selective about how much you know before you buy a title. Yes, the hype machine still exists. These guys have to make money. But you have the power to choose the quantity of that machine's output. For Fangamer, I'm Kevin Williams.
All right. So thanks, Kevin. We really appreciate you making the segment. Let's roll into fan spotlight for this week. We have a couple cool things that I have elegantly lifted from the EB Central blog, which I'll throw in the show notes. The first is a, I think they made this with PK Hack, is an Earthbound with a New Game Plus option. And Liz, you're the first person I ever heard talk about New Game Plus. So can you explain
really?
This feature for people? Yeah, you were.
Wow, New Game Plus is one of my favorite video game features. It the expression New Game Plus itself comes from Chrono Trigger, I believe, which was one of the first to do it, where once you've completed a save of your game, you get to start the game over, but you retain, depending upon the game, generally your levels, your gear, your not usually your money, but you get to retain a lot of what you had at the end of the previous save. So you get to go on and play the game much more quickly. You'll pretty much roll any enemy you come across, and you have all of your great items, so there's not as much pressure to go get all of those items again. Of course, if you're a completionist, which you are if you're doing New Game Plus, you do get all your items again, so not such a great feature, but
so it's... Do they amp up the enemies, make them harder the second? So it's just literally, you can play the game with your stuff again.
Mm-hmm. It means you can basically play the game blindfolded. It becomes that easy. Like, and in Chrono Trigger, you can beat the game at probably level 45 to 50, so you just start the game at level 50.
And that's a good time? Have you done that?
I've probably done, like, 12 new... You can stack them, so I've probably done, like, a dozen New Game Pluses off of an original game.
Wow.
Just getting all the gear, tons of magic tabs. Like, I love that game, so... I have no problem farming different tabs to level people's stats up.
So, Dan, as this is one of the few games you have played through to its completion that's an RPG, does this patch that I think Michael Kerr and Clyde originally made sound something like you'd actually want to try and play through the game multiple times?
Yeah, I think it helps establish a replay value, because a lot of RPGs, there's just such a barrier for re-entry that you're never going to replay it. If you remember one part at the beginning that you hated grinding through, that game's never going to get replayed.
He's absolutely right.
For me, it's the Peaceful Rest Valley, just so we're clear.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. That with the exploding trees, why would you want to do that?
Oh, that sucks.
That is a dick move.
Oh, those trees. Oh, I've talked about this before. I hate those trees.
The trees and the little UFOs that give you a cold.
They give you the cold.
Oh, man. Oh,
the whole thing sucks.
Bastards. I hate those guys. Anyway, before we get... Oh, actually, that is one of our awesome... we have two cool reviews of the podcast. One gave us a great... The other one was a one-star review that let us know that we don't talk... Fangamer's about Earthbound, and we're not talking about Earthbound on the podcast, so we fail at podcasting. There's our one Earthbound moment for the podcast.
I do what I can.
So we don't fail. Thanks, Dan. But the second one that I want to bring up, because we all have a soft spot in our hearts for trying to throw desperate fanboyism against Nintendo to try and make something happen, is another one from the EB Central blog, which is Postcards for Earthbound. This is a, I think Clyde is heading this up, sending postcards to the, I think it's the Nintendo of Japan location with "Please put Earthbound on Virtual Console."
Oh, so they're still trying that?
He's still fighting the good fight over there. So I feel we should definitely plug this. I know that there's been a lot of talk about why it's not going to be on there, and I don't know if I still have the heart to keep trying, you know?
I'm with you, man. I say, like, let a sleeping dead dog lie.
But
on the other hand, some people listening to this podcast might have signed fewer petitions than we have.
Oh, that's also a good point. Yeah.
I remember signing the Earthbound Zero for Game Boy Color petition and being very disappointed with the work.
So I'll put it in the show notes, but you know, if you have a stamp and a postcard, consider joining in, and because I would love to play a legitimate version of Earthbound on the Wii and not having to hack it to do something like that. So that's our two things for the fan spotlight for this week. So let's actually get ready to close up here. We're going to play another segment from Charlie at the end of the show, another audio candy. But before we close out, I definitely want to thank Dan for being on the show. It was great to have you here and bring a little more eloquent speaking to our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And more Earthbound.
I'm
doing this for the iTunes reviewers.
For that one guy.
Dan, what was your major in college?
English, all the way.
Look at the three of us.
We are the three
Look
musketeers
what we've done
of
with
English
our lives.
Majors and making
we've made
a podcast.
Liberal arts, everybody.
Liberal arts degree.
Catch the fever.
You too can be drunk at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night with your friends.
Across the internet streaming LaFrogue. Well, Liz, while I sip on my LaFrogue here, please tell our lovely audience, and I will not interrupt you, I promise, on how they can contact us, all the many ways that we'd love to hear their feedback and participation on the podcast.
All right, Garrett, as I finish my screwdriver, I will tell them the ways we can be reached. We can be reached through Twitter. Our name is Fangamer on there, and I am the Twitter liaison, as Garrett so aptly put it. So if you speak with anyone on Twitter with the suffix of LB, that's probably me. There, we can be reached on YouTube, which is, our name is Fangamernet, so if you give that a search, you can find any YouTube videos we've put up. We are available on Ustream. Our name is Fangamer, and that is where you can find the wonderful, fantastic Office Cam, as brought to you by Steve, who is taking great strides to improve the Office Cam every single time. So congrats to Steve. Office Cam reruns can be found on Vimeo, and I believe you would just find us under the name Fangamer there. I haven't done too much tampering with that. There's also Facebook, which is run by the fanciful Charlie. So if you search for Fangamer on Facebook, you will find us there. There is Starman.net, which is kind of our a cousin, brother, family, illegitimate
our mother,
child.
Our father.
Our, yeah.
Mother yeah. and father.
Our hot brother.
All right.
So, yeah, we can be found via Starman.net. And of course, there is Fangamer.com and Fangamer.net, which is our store where you can check out our product.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz. That was great, actually. All right. Well, from everyone at the Fangamer offices, for Dan and Liz signing off, thanks for listening, everyone. Please send feedback to the podcast at fangamer.com if you have any. One idea I want to throw out there, I'd love to hear feedback on from the audiences. We've considered doing a Ustream of the live recording of the podcast. So we record usually Saturdays. So you'd be able to hopefully see through video me and Liz. And we'd have a chat room so you could participate and join in if you'd like. We're considering trying to set this up. We just want to see what kind of interest there would be in it. So if you think it's a cool idea, you know, send us a line. There's many ways to get a hold of us. We'd love to hear it. So for this week, everyone, let's say goodbye.
Bye.
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 Hey everybody, this is Charlie. Welcome to Fangamer's Audio Candy, giving you a taste of the sweet music that fans make. This track is titled simply 600 AD in piano. The artist, Klutz, has several other piano arrangements on OC Remix, but none so powerful as this. They're usually just straightforward piano covers. Several years ago, I found his website and kind of chatted with him and got to know him a little bit. He started learning piano at age 5 or something. Eventually, he stopped making remixes, and last I heard, he was joining the seminary. Good luck, man. This song inspired me to think about the 600 AD era, its conflicts, its people, its politics, the story of Cyrus, Glenn, and Magus. It pretty much drove me to writing. Really compare to Klutz's treatment of Yearnings of the Wind, which is the title of the original version of this song. And if you do know of any piano arrangements that really compare, I'd love to hear them. Again, this has been Charlie with Audio Candy. If you know any fan music worth sharing, hit me up. My email is charlie@fangamer.com.